Hey, it's Beth here. It's over 65, still over 65, really 66, but and still talking. And still we have the coronavirus, and actually it's so hot here today. It's like, actually my phone gave an alert, a heat alert in Texas. I mean, when does that ever happen? But it's really weird. Everything green is now bleached out, sick yellow looking. Like, I don't know what happens to the world. Some days are just awful. So this is just an awful day. It's episode 122, July 11th, 2020. And I haven't done a podcast in days, and I did a podcast with Debbie yesterday and I lost it. She is Jane Thomas. What happened at the end of that? That's why I went back to her house. Okay, so you know Jane Thomas, her hero, her great-great-great-grandmother, who was like Paul Revere. And her husband was a big hero too, a commander at Cowpens, which was like this huge battle, like the biggest one for the revolution down south. Anyway, she made this trek, this journey, this sojourn, this thing of things with her husband and Missy. You know, Missy always shows up when I leave, and her husband. And they went all the way to South Carolina to go to the grave site of Jane and her husband. And they found this thing called Find a Grave. It's a app, and they used it, and they went to the wrong house. The lady said it's over on the other side of the street. They go to the other side of the street. There's Dave Thomas Street. So she's in the right place, but there's no graveyard. So she goes up to this lady who's putting groceries in her house. She helps them get her groceries in the house, and she says, "Do you know where the gravesite is?" She said, "Yeah, it's right there." So she runs back to the car. And she gets in, and they go across the street, and all the gravestones have been bulldozed into a corner in this fenced-off area. A subdivision was being built in this area. And she couldn't even find Jane's gravestone because they were all on top of each other and cracked and broken. And that was the end of that. She looked it up in the paper, and there had been a big problem with the developer. He said, of course, he didn't know, but he didn't restore them, and he's not going to. And that's the end of that story. So that's just depressing. Anyway, I also lost your podcast, which was going to tell you that, so I got to tell you that. But anyway, this is what I was thinking last night at 3 o'clock in the morning when I wake up and do my best thinking. I was thinking about the flapper girl, and I have a friend who emailed me, and she said that she had a mother just like that. And the problem with these mothers is that they seemed perfect. They weren't alcoholics or never did anything bad. They didn't love you with disdain, kind of like the English with all of their, when they had all those colonies, they treated everybody with disdain, like they were better than they were. And that's what her mother and my mother did. And it's very hard to live with because you can never have a day where they're drunk and they're saying awful things, but they're drunk and you can go, wow, she's crazy. You can't ever do that. And so in the thing, I made it sound like I went away to college and it was all better, just like that. And it's really not exactly how it happened. So what happened was two good things. I mean, one bad thing, which was I had a boyfriend all those years. Well, you know, I gained weight and I had this boyfriend. I'm not going to name his name. And he treated me with disdain too. It's just like my mother. I met him at a party and he was really the only person that didn't like me. I mean, not everybody loved me or really thought I was wonderful, but nobody hated me quite like he did. I mean, he looked at me with disdain, like, ew. So I thought, he had incredible taste, discerning taste. So I guess I don't know what's, I guess I wanted to win him over and then win a person who disdained me into loving me. So I spent 3 years on that. That was a big mess. Maybe even more years, I don't even know. Never won. So that was not a success. That was another bad thing that happened. But two good things did happen. One was, I made a wonderful friend in high school. Her name was Susie, and she had a brother that was like a brother to me. And I was always welcome in their home. So it made all that really much better, because in the summer before high school, I gained 25 pounds. And it was in Manhasset. I was from Roslyn, but some of the girls, we were bussed in because we didn't have a high school in our town. And all of my friends dropped me because I gained weight. It was shocking. I thought they were really my friends. And I was alone. Like, they walked as far away from me as they could. So I thought I was going with this group. And I get there and there's no group. So that was terrible. And then there was Susie. So the first day of school, I met her. She was nice. And I was like, oh my God, thank God. That was the second good thing that happened the first day of school. The other first day of school, oh, and we were the exact same weight. And for years we'd go on diets and if I lost an extra pound, or she did, we'd stop. So we lost weight and gained weight at the exact same times. We were both addicted to Sara Lee cheesecake. It was perfect. It was a marriage made in heaven. The other good thing that happened was on that very first day of school, I walked by the teacher's lounge. The door was ajar. I opened it up, and there was the Garden of Eden. There was the Garden of Earthly Delights. Every food that I adored was on this big, long table. There were cigarettes, Sara Lee cheesecake, Italian crumb cake, candy, everything, and a big refrigerator. I could only imagine what was in that. Anyway, a nun flicked me on the back of the head, and she goes, "Who are you?" I said, "Mary Beth Merkel." She goes, "Oh my God, I've heard all about you." It was the first day of school. How could I be doomed already? Well, I was going to try. I was going to try to make a new start, new leaf, all that stuff. But here she was staring at me, saying, "No, your dossier is in the principal's office." So I was like, okay, my goose is cooked. I'm done. My goal now is to get into that teacher's lounge. It's all I wanted. So my first day, the second day of school, you know, school assembly. Now they're telling us about lockers and all kinds of other stuff. And I walk in with dog stew on my shoe. I mean, I was desperate. It was cheap and dirty, but it worked. I was immediately kicked out. My sister Gil Mary Beagle held her nose and she said, "Get out." Okay. Took my shoe to the bathroom, flushed it in the toilet twice. I thought it was clean. It probably wasn't. Who cared? Ran to the teacher's lounge. It was more amazing than I even imagined. Butterscotch candies from Scotland, give me a break. I had them right in my pocket immediately. Two donuts in my mouth and I open up the refrigerator door. It's got every soda you could imagine. Now, this is 1970. People didn't have everything. There weren't parties with everything. There was a bag of potato chips for 10 people at a backyard barbecue and hot dogs, and you got one. People didn't eat like they eat now. This was the most beautiful room I'd ever seen. And it was all mine. I mean, until that first bell rang, I could have it all. They even had Crush, this amazing soda, in a bottle. It was in a bottle. But I knew I couldn't have that because I couldn't hide it. And I knew I couldn't drink it and leave any evidence. And I didn't want to take any cigarettes. I didn't even care. Food was much more important to me. But I was like, who are the cigarettes for? Nuns don't smoke. Or do they? This was something else I was going to find out. Do nuns smoke? And yes, they do. Yes, they do. That one, I'll tell you about later. Anyway, so I've got this. The first bell rings. I carefully take, I mean, there are 12 Sara Lee butter strudel crumb cakes, and they used to make them with real butter back in the day. Heavy as can be, took half of it, folded it in my pocket, and ran out. This was all I cared about. The only reason I went to high school. And I did it a total of 12 times. And I never got caught. So I had to give myself something. I was a master criminal. Brilliant caper after brilliant caper. And just elaborate schemes, plans, beautifully executed, time after time. My most famous in my own mind, because nobody knew what I was doing, Susie didn't even want to know anything about it, was the harmonica affair. This was what I was most proud of. There were very close contenders, but this one, see, along the New Jersey Turnpike, there'd be ladies' rooms where you got your, you know, gas, food, but in the ladies' rooms, they had nowhere else in the whole world did they have these huge vending machines with every kind of toy or thing you could want for $1 or 50 cents. There was this gorgeous harmonica. It was this grassy green color in a red case for $1. I bought it. It came in a box. It had everything. Took it home, stared at it for days. What can I do with this? Came to me. The student council was putting on a talent show. I signed up immediately. I was going to play Fly Me to the Moon on my harmonica. I mean, people, you know, they looked at me, you know, eyebrows raised, whatever. What could they do? What could they say? They had to let me do it. The students couldn't stop me. It was a talent show. Everybody got to be in it if you thought you had talent. Fly Me to the Moon, right there. The day came. I was a disaster because I had no idea how to play Fly Me to the Moon on a harmonica. Never even occurred to me that I should learn. What I was not a disaster at was faking a complete mental breakdown on stage. It really was great. I could feel my audience was so into it. Even the nuns didn't know what to do. They were scared. That's good performance. I should have gone into acting. Anyway, the principal gets up and she goes, Miss Merkel, go now. Compose yourself. Like, okay. I did compose myself in the teacher's lounge. This time I had 30 minutes because I signed up to go first in the talent contest. So at least 30 minutes. I was set and I earned it. So this time I took everything. I took cigarettes. I took everything. I drank a crush. That's how it was, like the Oscars. And I won. And I was at the big party afterwards. And this was my goodie bag. Everything. And I never got sick. No matter how much I ate, I never got sick. This was what I knew about myself now. So I had a criminal mind, criminal instincts. This was the only good thing I found in myself in my 4 years in school. I could make it for a while at least. I could do something. I mean, I was a master criminal. Getting away with this with nuns, I had to give it to myself, and I couldn't tell anybody about it. It was mine. Now, the next good thing that happened, and I knew I could make it in school. I knew I could make it in Florida with a criminal mind. So this gave me the confidence that I needed. I mean, I should have gone on these trips that they had every year. I didn't have the confidence. It was growing. Let's put it that way. But it was growing. The fact that I never got caught. That was in the win column. The second good thing that happened was I used to sleep over at their house all the time, Susie and Mark. Susie would always fall asleep around 10:30. Mark and I usually stayed up, listened to the Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid soundtrack, the record, and we played Gin Rummy all night long. I mean, never needed to sleep, neither did he. So, and I guess it could have, he was real nice looking and really nice, But I never thought of him as a boyfriend because he was Susie's brother, and we had rules about things like that. Like if you dated a guy, all your friends could never date him, even if you broke up. There were just rules. There were tons of rules that we had to follow. But somebody's brother, it was unthinkable. So it was unthinkable to me. So we were like the super best friends. And he said, come on, we're going. Didn't have to say that twice to me. I was in the car. And his mom fell asleep too. She used to drink a little bit. And when she went out, she went out. And the little brother was asleep too. Dead. We had like 7 hours. We used to just play Jim Rummy. He said, let's get in the car. And we got in the car. And he said, look, they're filming the scene in this Robert Redford movie called Hot Rock. And it's out of the prison on the island. Let's go. I'm like, yeah, let's go. We get there. And right as we get there, we get out of the car. We can see all these lights. A helicopter lands. We're watching a scene in a movie. Like that. It's 1970. That was unheard of. I didn't even actually think about how movies were made. And we just happened on it perfectly. So it was one of those magical nights. We watch and we watch. And then he says, let's go to the jetty. Let's go, you know, jump on the jetty and go all the way out. I was like, I had abandoned my body because I was fat. So I hated my body. So I used to swim, gave it up. Didn't even, like, I was always that person sitting in the chair with the pillow in front of her, like ashamed of myself. I didn't play sports. People didn't really ask me to, but if they did, I didn't run. I was ashamed of myself. But it was dark. It was really dark this night. So we get out of the car. There's this big, long jetty, big black rocks, gleaming kind of in this, like, little tiny bit of a moon. But you couldn't really see me. So I wasn't self-conscious. We started out on the jetty, and it was like, he's scared, you know, like I'm gonna get hurt because it's slippery. I take my shoes off. I'm like a monkey. I'm like a fat monkey, but I'm a monkey. That night, and we raced out to the end of the jetty. It was far. I didn't fall. I didn't break my ankle. I did it. And that night, I reclaimed my body. I love moving. I used to be crazy physical. And I'd shut it all down for like 3.5 years with a stupid pillow on my lap. That pillow's gone. That night, I reintroduced myself to my body and I was gonna play and do everything. I didn't care anymore because it was so much fun. Just running and jumping and catching onto the rocks and doing it well. I met my hands again. I was like, yeah, you guys used to be great. So I used to call myself a blob, not anymore. It was like everything still worked wonderfully. It was waiting for me to wake up. So that was the thing. These two things happened before I went away. And it was something. I had a criminal mind and a very athletic body. I thought, okay, you can make it. You can try. You can go anywhere. Especially the body thing. Like that, you didn't have to look good to be athletic. That was such a relief. And it was so much fun. That day, after that, the next day, I was in the pool at the club. I was going to the beach. I just didn't care anymore. I just wanted out. I just wanted to go. And I was running and jumping and joining everything. Because of that one night on that jetty. And a criminal mind is a wonderful thing to have. In Catholic school, everywhere, I just knew it. I knew it would come in handy. So those two gifts, and thank you, Mark. And yeah, I didn't do it myself, just wake up one day and I'm at school. I came prepared. I had two amazing attributes. And I made them work. Although, you know, of course, you know, didn't last, you know, college. But I, you know, let that be what that is. I never never stopped jumping up and joining the volleyball team and running to the store and running everywhere. I was not self-conscious. So that was like, it's so awful to be self-conscious. So those are the two things. So the flapper girl had some help. Everybody needs help. And those are the two, the nuns helped me. I know they didn't know I did it. They would have crucified me. I would have been held up, my head on a pole in front of the school. They would have loved to have catched me. I don't even know if they knew anybody was stealing. They had so much food. I really felt like I managed it well. I didn't take the last of anything. I only took a lot of what there was a lot of. I mean, it's a criminal mind. It's just, you know, you either got it or you don't. So anyway, just wanted you to know that the flapper girl had help. And I want you to stay sane. Stay with me. Whatever we're going through, we're just going through it together, but we're not getting crazier. It's really hard now because it's really hot and I'm really stuck inside. So, but we can do it, I think. And just wanted to make you understand that the flapper girl wasn't just a hero or something. She needed help. She needed to have two superpowers, you know, athletic ability and a criminal mind. So, I mean, maybe this is a bad superhero, but it was a Catholic girls' school superhero. So I will be back, and please just stay sane. Stay with me. Bye-bye.